Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are joining me tonight. How is everybody?
Good.
I'm really good.
Awesome. All right, guys, let's just let's dive right into it here. Let's recap an interesting day at Barber Motorsports Park for the Honda Indy Grand Prix. I'll turn it over to Matt to kind of dive through the first topics.
Yeah, interesting describes it pretty well. Top 10 for the race, if you missed it, was Sato, Dixon, Bourdais, Newgarden, Rossi, Hinch, Ericsson, Hunter Ray, Pagano, and Rosenquist. Obviously, Takuma Sato won, had a very good day. Ray Hall was shaping up to have a very good day as a team. Graham did retire with a mechanical issue, so that was kind of a bummer for him. But Jess, based on practice and whatnot, I always say you can't tell too much from practice, but Sato kind of came out of nowhere and really had a stranglehold on the race. So what did you think of Takuma Sato and Ray Hall Letterman as a whole this weekend?
I thought Ray Hall Letterman had a stellar weekend and they needed it desperately. Obviously, Graham had an issue that probably could not have been, you know, prevented, unfortunately. But I think as a team, they did fantastic. And I think the team really, really needed it. So I was really happy for them. I think it was a good showing.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Ray Hall was better in the three practice sessions than Sato was. But once Sato got the pole, Ray Hall was second. And it looked like they were on their way to having, I don't know, maybe about a 1-2 finish, but, you know, at least both in the top five until Ray Hall's unfortunate electrical issue, which, you know, you can't fault him for. You can tell how gutted he was after the race. But awesome to see Sato win. He is one of the more likable people in the paddock, especially after he wins. He was a lot of fun to listen to and to talk to in the post-race press conference, and all the pictures of him pretty much jumping in David Letterman's arms in victory lane was pretty funny to see. So happy for them, because I think this will help, you know, get them some confidence for the rest of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Not surprisingly, the pit lane parlay driver of the day, as voted by fans at home, was also Takuma Sato. Very deserving. He had an excellent race. Mike, if you had to pick a vice co-driver or vice driver of the day, who would you have picked as far as who stood out to you at the race day?
Sebastian Bourdais. You know, he was a little unsure of what he had going into this. And, you know, as he stated after the race, you know, going out starting the race on used red tires, he didn't think he would be able to pull off the 29-ish laps required for a two-stop stint. And I think he made it about 27 laps. And even he was surprised he made it that far. So, you know, props for him for, you know, making the most of, you know, his, I don't even know if it was a two-stop strategy in the end there because of the timing of the pit stop, but it looked like he had a little bit to pass Dixon there for a little while, but, you know, I think in the end it came down to tire wear and a little bit of, you know, fuel struggle after that last stint went 33 laps.
I'm going to go with Newgarden just because he kind of clawed his way back from, I think it was 16th he started and ended up fourth. So I was very, very impressed. It's a shame that Penske kind of struggled. I think that, you know, he had a car that probably could have given him a little bit more had he qualified a little bit better, but that was a huge, huge gain for him.
Yeah, along the same lines, because Newgarden did such a good job of overtaking in the field. It was great to watch all day. Marcus Ericsson also had a really good day in that respect, in that, you know, sometimes he was caught in the back of the field, but given pit strategy, hot tires, new tires, things like that, Ericsson was overtaking people at will and finished one place behind his teammate Hinchcliffe. So yeah, I would say if I had to pick somebody other than Newgarden as my vice driver of the day, I would pick Marcus Ericsson, because I thought he was very impressive and hopefully can keep that going, because he's had three good races now. This was his first good result of the year on paper. So hopefully we can keep that going. So there was a point in the race that was a little bit talked about on social media, maybe not as much as I would have wanted to, because it was kind of a big moment in the race. Max Chilton was hit by Tony Kanaan coming into the pits and buried his car into the tires. Simultaneously, Graham Rahal had a breakdown on track and was stranded. And IndyCar decided not to throw a yellow right away as to give drivers the chance to pit as to not get caught out by that yellow flag and ruin the strategy. And you may see somebody like Jack Harvey, who was kind of towards the back of the field, all of a sudden get to P1 because they pitted two laps earlier than the wreck. Jess, as far as that goes, what did you make of that decision to keep the pits open to allow everybody to pit?
Well, I've kind of touched on it before. I just feel like IndyCar looks at the situation that is currently at hand and picks whatever is most safe for the situation. So I have to side with them. And that's just strictly because I feel like IndyCar has everybody's safety in mind. We all know that IndyCar strives to be the safest series that there is. And I think they do a really good job at it. So I don't see a problem with what their decision was.
Yeah, man, I'm going to agree with Jess here 5 minutes into the episode. But yeah, you know, I feel like it was one of those perfect storm scenarios. You know, Graham off of turn 9 in a spot that's not particularly dangerous. So you go, okay, we can keep the pits open. You know, everybody was immediately diving in to begin with. And then Chilton, in an effort to, I think, avoid Kanaan, if I'm not mistaken, kind of just stuffed it into the barrier there. And it was one of those things where I thought a yellow was going to be thrown right away. But when you look back on it, and I watched the 30-minute race replay, and obviously they focused on that, it makes complete sense. And like I said, I think last week or the week before, if they are going to be consistent with, listen, if, you know, pit lane is blocked, or, you know, a situation in week one where Ed Jones hits the wall and Leist hits him and there's debris all over the track, yeah, you throw the yellow flag then. But if they are consistent with the situations in which a yellow is thrown, or, you know, maybe they wait to throw it for 30 seconds, I'm completely okay with it.
Yeah, it's a situational thing. I'm going to be very upset if there's a similar situation for the rest of the year where there is a car in a non-threatening position after a minor excursion or mechanical breakdown and they throw the yellow right away, because then it'd be very hypocritical. Me personally, I would have liked to see them define this before the season started, saying, you know, hey guys, here's how it's going to work. If there's some sort of non-emergency issue on the track, we're not going to throw the yellow right away. Unless they said that in a driver's meeting any race, you know, obviously we're not privy to that, but I think I would have liked the formal announcement. But yeah, as long as they keep doing it going forward, I guess it's okay. It's not my favorite thing in the world, just because I'm used to them throwing the yellow right away, because it does add a new element to the race. And if your pit window's open, a lot of guys try to pit right away just in case there is a yellow. So if this is just the way it's going to be moving forward, I guess it's okay, but not my desired outcome, I guess you could say. But if you have any thoughts on that, feel free to tweet to us at our Twitter handle, PitLaneParlay, PARLEY. Mike, you were in beautiful Alabama this weekend. Yeah. What'd you think?
I am glad it didn't rain. you know, it rained for about maybe 10 minutes when we got to the track Friday morning. It rained, pretty much rained sideways Saturday night, which cleaned up the track a little bit, I guess. And then it was fine on race day, and until I had to fly home Monday, which then ruined my flight home. But, you know, track-wise, with the race, I think, being a week or two earlier than it has been in the past, the track didn't look as green and nice as it typically does. But I mean, that place is so awesome. You know, the bridge over the track, you know, coming out of turn 4 or 5 is a really cool place to stand. We got to check that out a little bit during one of the practice sessions. There's just so much going on there. The promoters and everybody really do a good job of putting on a great show. And I don't know how the attendance was, but it looked very well attended from what I could tell. So, you know, all in all, you know, they had a free, you know, paddock passes on Friday, which really, really crowded the garage area. So I think that's a good sign that, you know, this race isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
Any workers' comp issues to report to Jake Neely?
No, you know, this week I did not smash my shin on anything. So thankfully I came away unscathed. It was a great weekend, and obviously, you know, you're probably listening to this on a Friday or some point over the weekend. You know, our interview with the lead mechanic from Harding Steinbrenner that came out on Tuesday was a really fun interview to do, and hopefully everybody enjoyed that. I enjoyed his a little bit more senior perspective than you know, speaking to Tyler Bell 2 weeks ago, is really cool to, you know, hear somebody who not only has worked with Colton Herta, but also worked with Brian Herta and has, you know, been around the paddock for a long period of time.
Also, kind of one observation I had too was, shout out to Mike Knapp. Good job this weekend again. Thanks for all your help. Was he posted a video, I think it was of the warm-up session from the press box. And I thought it was super cool that you could see the front stretch, the turn five area, and the back stretch area just from one vantage point. Because, you know, I'm just used to Road America, which is just huge, massive track where you see, like, I mean, even from our seats, we can see a bunch of turns. But I thought that was super cool. So from that vantage point, you could see them down the front stretch. You could see all the overtakes in turn five. You can see them cranking down the back stretch. So that's super cool. As far as the race goes, we're going to rate this race like we do the normal races. And I'll go first on this one. So as far as the rating of the race on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, I would give it a 6.5. I don't know if that's a little low, and I don't know if I'm just being mean. It was an okay race. There wasn't really anything wrong with it. It kind of lacked that one memorable moment or, you know, one crazy overtake or anything like that. I mean, there's a couple of really cool moments, a couple of good passes in turn five, but all in all, it was above average for Barber, but not up to excellent standards, in my opinion. What do you think, Jess?
I'm going to go a little bit higher than you. I'm going to say a 7.5. I think that obviously people were kind of bored with Sato being up front all day, but I think that the rest of the racing was really good. There was a lot to keep an eye out on. There was a lot going on with strategy and also with just the guys having little battles amongst themselves. So I thought it was pretty good. I definitely think it was way above average for Barber.
So I'm going to split the middle of you guys and go with a 7. You know, it was an interesting race. I enjoyed the keeping the pits open thing, as did most of the drivers, and kind of the drama that unfolded from that. There were some awesome passes throughout the race. You know, Pato again showing why he's going to be a force to be reckoned with for a while, with a good pass on not only Felix Rosenqvist, but a good attempt of a pass. I don't think he completed it on Simon Pagenaud at one point, only to have a fuel alarm pop up on his car there to ruin that. But and then really after the pit stop, wondering if these guys were going to be able to make it 33 laps from a tire wear and fuel perspective. We saw Willpower run out of fuel as he crossed the start finish line, so guys probably all in all barely made it across the line on fuel. So it was, everybody was really holding their breath watching the race at the track, wondering if these guys had enough to finish it. So wasn't the most amazing race ever, but there was a lot going on from a strategy perspective, which I appreciated.
Sweet. If you guys disagree at home, again, tweet to us and we will forward your request to Mike, who can either laugh at them or agree that you gave it a 7.2. Moving on, the disappointment of the day, as far as what you guys thought, a driver that thought you would do that you thought would do well that didn't do well or anything like that for various reasons. And before I toss it to Mike, just one quick thing. So we did touch on the fact that in our preview show about, is there going to be a race that rookies struggle at? Well, in a black and white point of view, Erickson was really the only rookie that lit it up at Barber. Herta had a mechanical failure that wasn't really his fault. Rosenqvist was meh throughout the race. Ferrucci kind of slid back through the field. Pato had a fuel pressure issue or something along those lines that hampered his race towards the end. So all in all, it wasn't the best day for the rookies. But Mike, was there one driver that you were feeling less than optimistic about after the race?
So I'm not picking on him. I'm going to get to it in a second. But with Spencer Pigot qualifying sixth and having an unlucky day again, he's not my disappointment. My disappointment is Ed Jones. I thought maybe, as a teammate, Pigot would share some information with him and they'd be able to, improve a little bit. And I don't know if it was because he started the race 15 seconds before everybody else and obviously, then had the penalty after that or what, but he didn't really show all that much pace. Looking at lap times, he was always consistently, 3/4 of a second slower than the guys in the top 10. So I was a little disappointed. I don't know if he's still feeling the effects of his hand injury. He's not wearing a brace on his hand or his finger or anything, but I would have assumed he would be battling at least for a top 10 with how well Spencer Pigot did in qualifying.
Okay, so I hate to do it, guys, but I let him go in our preview, but Ben Hanley.
Oh.
Ben Hanley was my disappointment.
No, no long-hanging fruit.
We just and no, this time I have to pick it. Like, it's so low, like, it's about to touch the ground. I mean, he was kind of like, what are the little table game where you got the ball and you, like, fling it off everything? Anyways, he was...
You're talking about beer pong?
No, not beer pong. I would know that one. I can't even remember what it's called. But anyways, he's just kind of bouncing around out there all over the place, bouncing off of other cars, just totally being in the way. I don't know if that was necessarily all his fault, but it was not a good look. You know, at least previously he kind of stayed out of the way, kind of just did his laps, learned some stuff. And that's kind of what I expected. Unfortunately, he definitely showed that he was a rookie and he needs more time.
As far as I'm concerned, trying to look at the stat sheet. I mean, at what point do we just give up on Marco? Is there a point? I mean, the guy finished last out of the Andretti Autosport drivers again, which I feel like is consistent for him. I mean, Zach Fiche started 23rd and beat him. And Zach Fiche didn't exactly have the best of days. I mean, he did a good job of moving his way through the field, but I mean, you try different strategists, you try changing the car numbers, you try this, you try engineers, you try that. And at the end of the day, there's one common denominator, and it's P14 when your teammates finish 5th, 8th, 12th, respectively. And then, I mean, you might as well count Colton Herta as a teammate, and Colton out-qualified him and has outpaced him all year. So, I mean, that in my opinion is a low-hanging fruit. That's what I said to you last week in the preview. You said, don't go for the low-hanging fruit. I'm like, what do you mean, Marco? And I made the mistake of picking him in fantasy, because every time I pick that guy in fantasy, he screws up or does nothing, which is the same as screwing up in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, he's not going to get fired ever, which is annoying, but, you know, there's so many things I want to say, but
you know, I'm just chuckling because you're making the noises that I usually make right before I get ready to go on a rant.
I gotta count to 5 in my head and move on to bright and shiny things, which is the fact that I'm putting on my smug face. The prediction that I had for best driver, winner, whatever, was at least the highest placing out of us three. So we had Joseph Newgarden finished 4th, Power finished 11th, and Ray Hall finished 23rd. Mike did make the classic mistake of texting me on Saturday saying that he was looking really good for his prediction.
And never doing that one again.
Classic mistake. We should really keep track of this as far as our weekly predictions, because I took a huge L in the struggle prediction. I will admit that. Although, at least I went out on a ledge a bit and I didn't pick Foyt as the struggle prediction, because I think Foyt has struggled for about 10 straight years now.
Yeah, I took the low-hanging fruit there. I'll admit that.
And Jess said Harvey. Harvey was doing okay and then got a speeding penalty that kind of ruined his day, but he did manage to claw his way back a little bit. But Jess, ultimately, I think if Mike and I had to agree, probably was right on that one, that Harvey did struggle a little bit. Finished 13th overall, but I was definitely wrong on that one. Definitely not correct on picking Sebastian Bourdais. So shout out to Sebastian Bourdais. Good job overall. Any thoughts, guys, on Barber as a whole? Anything we missed? Anything else you want to touch on before we move on?
Let's move on.
All right. Patreon number one.
All righty. Let's see here. Patreon number one. Let's just start from the top. Thank you, Colin Taylor, David Lighting. I'm super disappointed we didn't get to meet up at the track this weekend. Our buddy George.
I got to meet him this week. Yeah.
Just had to brag. I mean, it didn't help. I didn't have really any cell phone reception at the track, so I couldn't actually figure out where he was until after the race ended. Thank you, Jason Camps, Carrie Chim, Lindell McMurphy, and last but not least, and great to hang out with him a little bit this weekend. Thank you to Matt Grunholz.
All right, thanks to all those Patreon subscribers. And moving on. Hey, guys, did you know there's a Long Beach race this weekend?
What?
I know, right? We're jumping straight from a review into a preview. So Long Beach, one of my favorite races of the year, right up there with Indy 500, is this weekend. Just a quick championship update. Newgarden does have a 30-plus point lead heading into the race, followed by Scott Dixon, Takuma Sato, Rossi, Herta, Bourdais, Hinch, Power, Hunter A., and somehow Marco Andretti, who I just ranted about. But yet, so those drivers starting to distinguish themselves. But again, we won't really know a good championship outlook until probably after Indy. Acura jumping on for the first time as the Long Beach sponsor forever and ever. It was Toyota, but now Acura, which is owned by Honda, is now the sponsor. And actually today it was announced by Racer that Acura would actually be the title sponsor for Jack Harvey for the weekend. So that's cool. As far as last year's race, Alexander Rossi absolutely dominated. Bourdais and Dixon were doing very well until getting that unfortunate yellow that really ruined their race. And then Bourdais was, quote, back with the idiots, end quote, and was taken out. But guys, Jess, who do you think's going to win?
I gotta pick Bourdais. I mean, you know, he just always does so well. And he's just kind of a beast at that track. And I think he got some momentum last weekend. So I'm going to go with Bourdais.
I am going to go with Will Power. Now, the last time I did that, I jinxed him immensely, but he finished second last year. Had a very good two-stop strategy in the race. And you know, after two straight races of bad luck, I think he's due for some good luck in this one. So, Mr. Faux Will, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I jinx him again.
Gosh, I don't know who I should go with.
Marco?
Should I be bold or not bold?
Bold.
All right. Just for the record, my not bold prediction is Rossi. My bold prediction is Simon Pagenaud. I think he'll finally turn what seems like a year and a half of average driving. I mean, he's done fine, but for being a Team Penske driver, like, fine's not good enough a lot of times. Last year, he qualified third and unfortunately was taken out in the first turn at no fault of his own by Graham Rahal. And then Rahal got a penalty, came back and finished, I think it was like third somehow.
Finished fifth.
Or fifth, yeah. But, you know, I felt really bad because I felt like that was one of those defining moments of Pagenaud season that kind of really put a damper on things. So, you know, I'll say Simon Pagenaud and I'll just keep my fingers and toes crossed and we'll go from there. But as far as a struggle pick, Mike, who do you think is going to struggle this weekend?
Oh, boy.
Don't say Floyd. Floyd should be off limits for the rest of the year.
Okay, that's fair. Long Beach, I am going to go with the Ed Carpenter cars. Jordan King didn't do particularly well there last year. We haven't seen a whole lot out of Ed Jones this weekend. And Spencer Pigot finished 15th last year, a lap down after starting 18th. So this might be a track going into May where they don't show as well as they started to this past weekend in Barber.
I can't disagree with you, but I'm going to go with Zach Veach. I think he's already been kind of on the struggle bus this year. I think that it's going to unfortunately continue for him. I think he's just having kind of a, we'll call it a sophomore slump that he kind of needs to dig himself out of. And for some reason, I feel like he's just going to have a really rough weekend.
I got a crisp cold beer to the first person who replies on Twitter that Joseph Newgarden will not finish the race. And if he does, the first person to reply to me on Twitter is going to get a beer at some point from me somewhere, somehow. I'm sure about the logistics of that. I mean, if we can send 400-pound cheese blocks to people, I'm assuming we can send beer to somebody. That's probably not.
I mean, why not? We can put the beer in the cheese block and send it.
There you go. You got to chisel the beer out of the cheese itself. But I don't know. Gut feeling. I'm usually wrong on these struggle picks. What is it going to be? A hot mess disaster?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be a hot mess disaster. But if it happens, I'll look really smart? Question mark? I don't know. But overall, yeah, really looking forward to the race. Weather's going to be super good. We'll get an update there at the end of the episode, like always. Also, we talked so much about the weather for Barber and nothing ever happened. Isn't that crazy?
Of course.
And our 2 feet of snow in Minnesota actually just turned to like 5 inches of snow or something. That's what Sammy told me before she left for work today. But weather is crazy right now. I don't know what's going on, but hopefully if you guys listen to this by Friday, I'm not buried in snow here in Minnesota. That was kind of a quick Long Beach preview. You got anything else to report on? Pato's got a new sponsor.
Yeah, Pato's sponsored by GESS Biogas, the same people who gave him some money this weekend and were also primarily featured on Colton Herta's car. But I have a question for you guys about Long Beach, which Mike Knapp and I on our Patreon recording completely missed on. So this year combined, there has been 4 yellow flags in 3 races. Do we think we're going to see, what typically happens in a number of IndyCar races is, there's some crazy pile up in the first corner of the first lap. Are we going to come away unscathed again and have a relatively clean race, or do we think this one breaks the mold this year?
I'm going to say that no, it's going to be pretty clean. I feel like the first turn, first lap, they're kind of saving that one for the GP of Indy. I don't know why. I just got that feeling that it's going to be a melee, maybe because it usually is a melee. But I think that they'll come away out of the first turn. Okay, now is it going to have more than one yellow? Yeah, I think it will. I think it'll have a couple. But I don't think it'll be any big, huge, crazy mess.
Is Jordan King racing this weekend? Because if not, then I'd probably say no. Long Beach has been there was a race a couple years ago. Maybe it was like 2015. That's kind of scarred me. It was like caution-free the entire race, and I think I fell asleep. It was right after. It was either right before or right after NOLA, and that kind of set the tone for the Aero Kit era for me, which – wasn't that great except for high speed ovals, but you never know. It just depends how crazy drivers get and if there's a lot of desperation out there. So I think if we get one yellow early on or towards the middle of the race, then yes, I think we'll get more than, what is it, 4 yellows, 3 yellows?
Yeah, 4 total.
4 total. I think we may get more than that. So Mike, we can't let you go without your take there.
My take there, I think this one is going to break the mold. I guess this for Barber, but, guys are starting to get to the point now where points are becoming more and more important, especially as maybe some guys have some not so good races and they're going to start gambling maybe a little bit more than they would the first few weeks of the year. So that's my quick take on that one. So we will go right in to Patreon shout out number 2. Just wanted to give a quick kind of insight to Patreon for maybe people who don't listen. Each race weekend, whoever's at the track, whether it's Jess and I or all 4 of us, including Mike Knapp, we do a little kind of off-the-cuff weekend prediction, whatnot, that we throw up there. So if you don't subscribe, definitely subscribe and check it out. It's usually pretty funny. If you listen to the one during Barber, my predictions were all completely wrong. I'm not going to say what they were because it's on Patreon. So check it out. And shout outs round number 2 here. Thank you to Michael Goodyear, Michelle, Mike Knapp himself, Mike Silver. Thank you to Sean Crawford. And last but not least, thank you to Mr. Stephen King. Enjoy yourself in Long Beach this weekend. I almost forgot where we were going. But I also real quick wanted to highlight one thing that Matt puts on our Pit Lane Parlay social media every week is a get to know the hosts. And this weekend was your favorite food at a wedding. I picked mashed potatoes. Did you know that Danica Patrick thinks the secret to great mashed potatoes is truffle oil?
You're making that up.
I swear to God, it's right on ESPN.com.
What? How did that random? What in the heck?
Why is that even on ESPN?
Who cares enough to know that?
Brant James apparently did 7 years ago.
And
awesome. Woo!
Why'd you steal my Danica fact?
Just had to switch it up this week and dive right in there.
Does that mean I can just start saying no?
Yeah, you could steal my no. go ahead, man. I'll let you go to the next topic.
All right. Well, in non-Danica related news, because she only won one race in her career, I'm going to do Stump the Host this week, and it's going to alternate, Mike, between you two guys, and whoever gets the most points wins. There is an odd number of answers, so hopefully we get a winner out of you two. We'll start with Jess. Kept it super simple this week. We've had 7 straight years of 7 different winners at Long Beach dating back to 2012. Just go ahead and one at a time name those winners. And you don't even have to give me a year.
And you said you're starting with me, right?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Thanks for asking.
Can you go through the question one more time?
Just name the winners of Long Beach from 2012 to 2017, and there's 7 different choices.
And in no particular order.
And don't Google it just because I read it back to you real quick.
I'm not. Go ahead.
All right, Jess, go ahead.
Oh, I already guessed one. Bourdais.
That is incorrect.
Ooh.
Rossi.
Yes.
Low-hanging fruit.
Take it. Well, this is one of those take the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Jess, you should have started with that one.
Oh, well. Will Power.
Yes.
Good call. You stole my next guess. Simon Pagenaud.
Yes.
Scott Dixon.
Yes. So we're down to 3.
3 left. Elio Castroneves.
No.
Hold on. I'm just totally drawing a blank. Newgarden?
No.
Hunter Ray?
No.
Oh boy. I'm starting to run out now. Oh, I got one.
Ray Hall?
No.
Sato.
Yes. First career win. So we're down to 2.
I think there's a random one in here.
Yeah, there's got to be a random one in there, I think, at this point. Oh, man, why?
Ooh.
5 seconds.
Did he already say Pagenaud?
Yes.
Yeah, crap. I don't know.
All right, Mike.
Hinchcliffe.
All right, so we got down to 1.
I have no idea.
Road course specialist.
Oh, what's Higgett? His name?
No, he wasn't.
Conway.
Yes.
Oh.
So between 2012 to 2018, it was Power, Sato, Conway, Dixon, Pagenaud, Hinch, and Rossi.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at it, 6 different teams, too, so... AJ Foyt already won. I was about to make a Foyt joke, but I guess that doesn't work. Hey, Jack Harvey, it's your turn. All right. Moving on. So good job to Mike. I think Mike won that. Math is correct. Or we can just do made up math and give Jess the win.
That's what I'm talking about.
There we go.
No.
Take your Danica facts elsewhere. Moving on. One thing that I briefly touched on in the pitfalls last week that we didn't really get to kind of expand on just because we were a little condensed in time was what Marcus Ericsson said about DRS. And to just expand on that a little more, he was basically saying that IndyCar was more pure than Formula One in the sense that push to pass is better to attack and to defend with than DRS, where basically the person who's defending is a sitting duck. I just wanted to get your guys' quick, rapid reactions on that since we didn't get too much time to expand on that. So, Mike, if you want to go ahead.
Love it. Agreed. Like Ericsson said, if you don't have DRS, what's the incentive to pass when you can just make it easier when you have DRS? So, spot on. You have to really, manage push to pass. Some of these rookie drivers have been learning early on that you just can't use up all your push to pass early because then you're a sitting duck at the end of the race. So I'm clapping for Marcus Ericsson on this one.
I hate to have to do this, but I have to agree with you. And I am also clapping for him. I think you nailed it when you said, you got to save your push to pass. You got to conserve it because you've got the whole race. And unfortunately, if you decide that you're going to throw it all away in the middle, you're going to kind of screw yourself at the end. So I definitely think push to pass is a much better option.
I also liked his savage burn on that one Twitter user who said, what do you know about overtaking? You sucked or something. And he responded by him overtaking Alonso in Japan. I thought that was super cool. Yeah, shout out to Marcus Ericsson. Good job. We appreciate that. How about that new McLaren livery that was just announced? McLaren is getting a lot of media attention nowadays. They had a tobacco sponsor on their car. Uh-oh. The caveat is, well, A, I didn't go out and smoke a cigarette. It's shock, I know, right? But B, there's a warning label right above the advertisement for this company saying something about nicotine is an addictive chemical and that if you use it, you may get addicted. That's so strange with cigarettes. I never knew that.
But interesting.
I know, right? So we can kind of combine that into, if you guys had any thoughts about Alonso testing today, Tuesday, at Texas Motor Speedway. I don't know if you guys saw any of what he said, basically that doing IndyCar full-time is not out of the window yet. May do it one day, but this year it just didn't work. So Jess, tobacco sponsor, Alonso test, livery, any thoughts on all three?
Livery, I'll start there. I am not as impressed as a lot of other people are. I was really hoping that it would just blow my socks off, and I'm kind of like, nah, it's all right, but I don't know. Maybe in person it'll be better. I told one of our listeners who was talking to me about it the other day that if it's in pearl orange, it would be smoking hot, but I doubt they're going to do it in pearl. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see it in person. I can't wait to see it in person. Test today, I did see a little bit about some things he was saying. He hasn't ruled out running a full season later in his life. He didn't say next season either. So, I mean, obviously, you know, at some point he might decide to do a full season. I think that's fantastic news. I think it's kind of news that everybody's been waiting for. Obviously he didn't confirm it, but he also didn't say, well, heck no, I'm not going to do a full season. So I thought that was really good. And then the tobacco sponsor thing, real interested to see if that actually ends up staying on board. I saw some people saying that it may push the envelope a little bit too much and may end up getting taken off. I thought that the warning label is hilarious. So yeah, other than that, I mean, I don't have a problem, and we already kind of touched on it. I don't have a problem with big tobacco, or I guess now at this point, big, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Big marijuana, big alcohol, all the big companies. I don't have a problem with any of them throwing some money at racing. I think that everybody who, you know, is of age to partake in these particular things should be also of age to make their own decision about whether they're going to use said chemicals or not. So, yeah, I think it's kind of silly that they're not using tobacco money. I say go for it.
But tobacco's or nicotine's addictive.
You know, some people like to get addicted to things.
Oh, okay. Mike, thoughts?
Yeah, so I'll start with tobacco or the warning label. Like everybody had chuckled a little bit, but if that's all it takes to get tobacco sponsorship back in IndyCar, which is, you know, obviously, Marlboro's had spent a lot of money in IndyCar back in the day. If that's all it takes, I'm all for it. I don't think I need to expand on it because I'm just repeating what Jess would say. But I did just want to throw in a couple extra things. I do agree with Jess on the livery. It's all right, but I think it's one that when I see in person, well, I probably will like much more. So save this soundbite for, I don't know, about a month-ish from now when I see the car on track. But our buddy Aaron Moore, M-O-H-R, who you can find on Twitter at Sophmoric, but it's S-O-P-H-O-M. O-H-R-I-C, so it's got his last name in there, who is I believe he's a YouTuber and works at a TV station down somewhere in Texas, I think Dallas, was at the test today. A few little tidbits, Netflix had cameras there shooting the test today, which is pretty cool, so I don't know what that means, but I'm sure we'll get something cool out of that, which is great for IndyCar. And it doesn't sound like he ran a ton today, just kind of shook down the sister car of the main 66 that was built in, what was that, in the UK, the one they built over here in the US is the one he drove today, and ran about a dozen laps or so. So, you know, great to see him kind of get used to it, and great to hear, a short video clip of, the car on a super speedway, you know, running down the straights. It's always a nice sound to hear.
Yeah, the only thing I have to add is, you know, kind of like what Mike said about Marlboro, is if, you know, had we known all they had to do was put something on the car saying nicotine is addictive, we could have had Players, Cool, Marlboro, Hollywood, a couple other big tobacco companies stay in IndyCar, which would have helped guys like Connor Daly, who can't get rides, or it could have helped a team like Michael Shank back in 2012 buy an engine because they had more money than they knew what to do with. So hopefully we see a trend. You know, that's just my two cents as a selfish racing fan wanting to see more money in the sport. But yeah, good thoughts on all of that. Moving on, quick yay or nay on Sage Karam's livery, Mike.
I'm not sure.
That's a nay. All right, Jess.
Nay.
The more they play with it, the more I like it. So they keep tweaking it and keep putting out little teaser pictures. So I'm starting to like the little ghost graphics. I think that's interesting now how it's going to look on the track. I don't know if you'll be able to see it or not, but so I'm kind of torn, but I'm going toward the side of liking it.
I'll give it a yay for now, but subject for change. We'll just put it that way. IndyCar and the NBC Indianapolis 500 lineup continues to take shape. This past week, Dale Jr. was announced onto the broadcast team. So that should bring definitely a good insight into just a different perspective on the sport. And obviously, Dale Jr. has a cult following of fans. So never hurts to bring a guy like him on board. I mean, I was scrolling through my, you know, guide today on Sling, and Dale Jr. has his own show on NBCSN. I didn't realize that. So definitely can't hurt there. Jay Fry says there's definitely some more teams on the horizon as far as joining IndyCar. So a couple new teams interested in joining the sport. Again, never a bad thing. Hashtag in Jay Fry we trust. A couple more quick items here. Gateway doubleheader next year, 2020. The IndyCar and NASCAR Truck Series will both share a weekend at Gateway. So this talk that we've been having for a couple episodes in the past about IndyCar and NASCAR doubleheader may not be what we had in mind, but definitely a start of something where just trying to get more fans, more action at the track, and maybe expose different fans to different racing series. Mark Miles and I think it was Jim Aiello talked this week, and that are prior to Barber, and there was no imminent return to Japan for IndyCar in the future. A bunch of different sides want it, like Bridgestone and NTT and Honda, but unfortunately nothing's in the making. We'll touch on one more piece of news real quick after I get Jess, do you have any thoughts on any of those things I just bombarded you with?
So I think that my main thoughts on the Dale Jr. thing, I think that's fantastic. Frankly, I think he is a much bigger draw than our favorite female driver of all time. Because, I mean, he has a unique perspective of things, and the fact that he brings so much passion to it, I think it's going to play well for the IndyCar fans. Even though he doesn't have the IndyCar experience, I think he will put on a better show than she will.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very excited to, you know, at least listen to the replay of hearing Dale talk. But also shout out to Mike Knapp. He wrote a column on Dale Jr. and the NBC broadcast up on our pitlaneparlay.com website. So check that out and share with Mike what you think about the article. The Japan thing is not shocking to me. It's, you know, it is what it is. I kind of could see that one coming. And I'm kind of intrigued by a NASCAR truck/IndyCar doubleheader weekend. Maybe that's, you know, a step one to a full NASCAR IndyCar doubleheader. Either way, I think it'll be a good draw overall for the crowd.
Wait. All right, Jess, get your who soundbite ready, all right?
I'm ready.
All right. Dragon Speed, Jess's low-hanging fruit there, has announced that they have signed James Allen, who I believe drove a couple races in their LMP2 program last year, as a development driver for their IndyCar program. Go ahead, Jess.
Who?
When I saw the announcement, I thought they were talking about legendary F1 commentator James Allen. I was really confused for a hot second, but Mike, go ahead if you have a thought.
Yeah. I think that's the prevailing sentiment around the paddock. Now, just a quick side note, you know, talking to a handful of the Dragon Speed guys this weekend, they're all very nice guys. Seem like they're really invested in IndyCar, which you love to see. But I don't even know, trying to figure out how to word this. It's great that they, you know, James Allen is a development driver. I'm sure that probably comes with some money attached to it, which if it helps Dragon Speed, it helps IndyCar, that's cool. But with the limit on testing in terms of what IndyCar can do, or what, you know, Dragon Speed can do, you know, on test days and whatnot, would he be better suited? You know, maybe they can attach him in a you know, one of the Carlin Indy Lights cars as some sort of joint effort or something. I think that would be more development than maybe one or two tests and running in a simulator this year for IndyCar. So that's my only confusion, is how he's going to fit in, because there is, you know, obviously during the season, you know, we only have a handful of tests. He's obviously not going to do the IMS tests in a couple weeks. So I don't know. I'm very confused on where he fits in.
Well, obviously the who thing. I am all for Dragon Speed's passion and their wanting to come in IndyCar and make a statement for themselves. My problem with this is that, like you said, there's a serious lack of availability for testing. And I don't want them to just throw people at the car just because. So I'm a little concerned that this is not going to work out well for them. And yes, like, the money is good for Dragon Speed, is good for IndyCar if he's bringing money, which I'm sure he is. However, it can't all be about the money. There's got to be some experience there too. So I am hopeful that they are thinking things through and not just looking at the paycheck. But this one has me concerned, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, yeah, I think, like I tweeted, that their pace in practice was actually pretty respectable, all things considered. I mean, maybe this shows that they're very serious about their prospects of IndyCar for the years to come, and maybe they're just looking around the corner and making sure they have their ducks in the row, and if they do need to expand to two cars next year, I know that's kind of a stretch, but I'm trying to find the positive outlook in this. But yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I know he's not much of a development driver, but I'm still thinking Oriel Servia is out there somewhere, someplace, looking for a job outside of the Indianapolis 500, and IndyCar didn't pick him to develop the new car for a reason, or, you know, by accident. So I would still think that he might be an asset somewhere if I was a new team. So that's my only thing. But yeah, you know, James Allen, we're saying who, but, you know, hopefully something good happens one day and you end up in the Indianapolis 500 or something. Is that
very well said?
Is that a nice way to kind of segue into our pitfalls, which are also full of fun and happiness?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, just what you said there, you know, and what Jeff said in terms of their, you know, excitement in IndyCar, and, you know, if this means greater things for them in the future in terms of a full season or two cars, you know, I'm all for it. It's just, you know, it's a little confusing to see how they fit in. So we can dive right into pitfalls. I'll go first to get mine out of the way with. Mine should be pretty short. Team Renault, obviously a very forgettable F1 race in Bahrain. Was that 2 weekends ago at this point? But that's not my issue. Yeah, it is what it is. But Nico Hülkenberg said the team has similar problems in its new car that it had last year. So I'm wondering, similar to how Williams, you know, missed pretty much all preseason testing because they weren't ready, what did Renault do all winter? And I don't really know where else to go with that. Obviously, Ricciardo has struggled at the start of the year, which, you know, I think everybody expected going from Red Bull to Renault. But if they didn't improve the car and its weaknesses, what did they do all winter? That's all I want to know. And I don't think anybody could actually answer that question. If you can, please reach out to us.
Oh, I got it. I know what they did. Okay. Did you watch the F1 documentary on Netflix?
I watched part of it. I have not gotten to the Renault episode.
Well, they probably spent all season taunting Red Bull. there's a very cringeworthy moment where Christian Horner and whoever runs Renault bump into each other after Red Bull drops Renault and then Renault signs Ricciardo. And it's like incredibly awkward and uncomfortable. And the Renault guy's just laughing at Horner. He's like, now you need a new engine and a new driver. It's like, oh, that's cringeworthy.
Yeah. So I'll have to watch that tonight, but
sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I'll probably forget in 10 minutes anyway.
Well, yeah, did you know that Daniel Ricciardo went to Renault? That's what I was spoiling.
Yeah. That's what you're spoiling. Then
yeah.
I have not been under a rock for the last 6 months. So unlike the Renault engineers, apparently. With that, Matt, why don't you go next?
Yeah, that was my first dad joke in a while. My pitfall. So we love everything about IndyCar. Obviously, we do the show every week talking about everything to do with IndyCar. And IndyCar has done so many things right lately. But the pitfall for me this week is unfortunately the TV ratings that came out today. IndyCar and Barber on NBCSN recorded a 0.2, which according to Adam Stern was the rating, and then that averages out to 296,000 viewers. Simply put, that's pretty bad. And I'm not one to look too deeply into ratings because I think they can be very misleading. There are definitely a lot of other ways to consume media nowadays, which we have talked about in the past several times. However, there's still no excuse to what looks like to be losing about a third of the audience. It was about 0.3 at every race last year, and there's no direct comparison that we can do with Barber last year just because it was split up into 2 days. So there's not really something we can compare it to. However, between this weekend not going super well, I think maybe NASCAR affected it, and you can always make an excuse here and there. Next week, Long Beach shares, I think, similar times to the Masters on Sunday, which is not good either. I definitely say disappointed so far in the TV ratings, and I definitely thought we would see a little increase, not super significant, but I definitely didn't think we'd see it go down as much as I would have thought so far. Jess or Mike, if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Go ahead, Jess.
Hopefully it's a fluke. Like we've talked about with other ways, people view things now. I'm hoping it's just a fluke and that it's not really that much of a loss. People may be recording it and watching it later, things like that. So especially this time of year, because the majority of the country is just coming out of their deep freeze. So they might be, going to, go outside for the first time in 6 months. So I can't really say that I'm too worried yet, but I'm hoping, by GP of Indy or so, that it starts to kind of start ticking back upwards.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it's disappointing to see for sure. But I know off the top of my head of, quite a few people who DVR'd it for whatever reason, including my parents, who DVR'd it because they were, they were out doing some stuff this weekend. So it is what it is. I'm still arguing for some sort of metric on streaming, especially with, I'm sure a lot of people in Canada who are finding a way to stream in, the Mexico and South America that got the free streaming again this weekend. However, that it would be nice to get an overall picture versus just regular TV, because I don't think regular TV accounts for, Hulu Live and all that stuff, which a lot more people are using than I even realized until I started digging deeper into it last week, even before this TV rating discussion came up. So disappointing and definitely something to keep an eye on, but definitely not time to hit the panic button yet. I think it's Jess's turn.
Yep. On that note, I am going to hit a panic button. I'm going to hit the panic button for NASCAR. So I don't know if you guys watched Bristol. I did not. I saw some pictures from the track, and also Texas the weekend before. Again, didn't watch it. Saw some pictures from the track. So apparently some numbers have come out, and Texas the weekend before had approximately 40,000 people that went to the race. And unfortunately, it's even less this past weekend for Bristol. They're guesstimating 38,000. The last time I saw, they had sold 36,000 tickets prior to the race. So it looks like they had about 2,000 walk-ups, which is decent, but that is a very, very empty track. So obviously, we've talked about it before. NASCAR is a hot mess disaster, as I like to say. They look to be just burning themselves to the ground. This is like really, really bad for them. And I feel bad for them, honestly, at this point, because I think they're struggling and they don't know what to do. So I really hope for the sake of motorsports in general, they can kind of regroup and start to kind of pull things back together. But they obviously need to make some changes, because it's almost not worth the cost of putting on a race, you know, with all of the transportation and everything else that's involved in just getting the cars there for 38,000 people. Especially because you have to imagine that a lot of those tickets were comped. You know, there's always giveaway tickets and things from different vendors and whatnot. So it just, I am really worried for them at this point.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is, you know, I've seen a lot of NASCAR fans on social media say that Bristol should be, you know, just drop the day race and go to the night race only. I think that would probably make sense, especially if Bristol decided, hey, we're not even going to sell tickets in either of the ends, only in the, you know, the straightaway part of the grandstands. You know, that's not a good decision, because it makes the track look super empty. And I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to bunch it up for TV, but people aren't that dumb. They could see as the cars go around the track that 60% of the stadium's empty. But it seems like every time NASCAR makes some sort of decision, they make the wrong decision or make it worse. So I'm not confident in, you know, I think Bristol going down to one race, like a lot of fans have said, is the right thing to do for NASCAR. But I'm not confident in NASCAR's decision making.
Well, yeah, and they should either do what the Oakland Raiders do or what IMS does for the Brickyard 400, which is just put a bunch of banners over the seats and hope nobody notices. That maybe would help. I have no idea, but yeah. And it's almost like, you know, people have these things called smartphones where they can take these, what do you call them, pictures, and they can post them to this thing where other people around the world can just look at their phones and look at these pictures too. It's almost like it's called like Twitter or something.
Right. Just like self-Googler Danica Patrick, people can use the internet.
Right? Guys, what? Danica Patrick has a mashed potato recipe or something. Who would have thunk? And also, Rubble who sauce. Needs to know that, for God's sake? I'm still not over that. But yeah, there's no hiding. The same thing with IndyCar at Iowa. I mean, that race starts and people are like, you know, where are all the fans? And you can't really hide it. So they may as well just stop trying.
That's fair. I can't argue that. And with that, thank you everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope you enjoy Long Beach if you're there. The weather looks beautiful. And I'm very jealous, because this is the first race of the year that I will not be in person at. But if you see Mike Knapp, he is on his way out there Thursday night, Friday morning. So say hello. We'll put a picture of him on our social media so you know who he is. And Jess, go ahead and sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
Racecast weather forecast for the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. I'm meteorologist Doug Schneider. As you might expect for Southern California, the weather for Long Beach will be beautiful. Both Saturday and Sunday will feature sunny to mostly sunny skies, light winds, and comfortable temperatures. On Saturday, morning temperatures will start out in the mid-50s and top out in the lower 70s in the afternoon under sunny skies. On Sunday, there may be a little more cloud cover, but it will still be a mostly sunny day. Morning lows will be in the mid-50s again, with an afternoon high temperature around 70 degrees. For both days, winds will be from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. For the most up-to-date forecast updates, visit racecastweather.com, and follow @racecastwx on Twitter.